Every 23rd year, for 23 days, it gets to eat. And the things it leaves behind, like the thing it left in Poho County that night, the nightmare on four wheels, was a horror all its own.
Welcome to Now Playing's bonus Jeepers Creepers series.
I don't know if it's a demon or a devil, or just some hungry thing from some dark place in time. I just know it's not gonna stop coming after you or anyone else it wants to.
As seen through the eyes of our hosts, Marjorie.
Just go tell them what you saw so that we can get out of here, okay?
Arnie.
I've looked that ugly thing eye to eye. I know it, and it knows me.
And Stuart.
You got your team. You got experienced men who know this thing.
The team is more than law enforcement. Anyone who's looked this thing eye to eye and lived to tell about it and wants to do something about it.
These podcasts contain detailed plot spoilers and harsh language.
You know the part in scary movies where somebody does something really stupid and everybody hates them for it? This is it.
Listener discretion is advised.
I hear it playing while one of you is screaming. Screaming down in the dark somewhere. Screaming the last scream you'll ever scream.
Today we're discussing Jeepers Creepers Threepers, starring Jonathan Breck, Meg Foster, Gabrielle Haw, Chester Rushing, Stan Shaw, Brandon Smith, directed by Victor Salva. Peekaboo, this is Arnie, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And Marjorie.
Jeepers Creepers 3, Victor Salva's first time in theater since Jeepers Creepers 2. I mean, I'm sure he's bought a ticket and gone to a movie.
Not true. I mentioned last time that I felt like Jeepers Creepers 2 was a movie that he made to get something he really wanted made into theaters. He did that. About 5 years later, he made Peaceful Warrior. And God help me, I sat through all of it. All 2 hours of that thing.
Did that actually get theatrically released? Because I literally read news stories that said this was his first time since Jeepers Creepers 2 to...
Fake news. This was in theaters in LA and New York at the very least. It was a limited release. It was an awful attempt basically at making or remaking The Karate Kid with a gymnast. And it did get some kind of release in New York and LA. I wasn't tempted to go at the time, but it is a best-selling inspirational book that Salva read in prison. It was something that helped motivate him in his darkest times, and so it did feel in that way like a personal story. I wish I could celebrate it as a comeback of any kind, but it is god-awful. It may be his worst film. First and foremost, the Mr. Miyagi character is played by Nick Nolte, who is a gas station mechanic with lightning moves so fast the camera can't catch him when he's leaping up on top of buildings and flipping and doing gymnastic moves that I know Nick Nolte, senior citizen, drunkard, can't do.
Oh my. I think I kind of want to watch this now with a few beers.
Yeah, many beers and the fast forward button liberally applied because it's really boring. It's really long and still homoerotic. There's lots of scenes of shirtless gymnast boys and all of that. But basically, Nick Nolte is the voice in this gymnast head that gives him the inspiration to bounce back from a motorcycle accident and a leg fracture and qualify for Olympics. And I think as a book, many people celebrated it. As a movie, I never heard anybody that liked it. And I feel like I at last saw Salva show his heart, maybe since the first time since Powder, but it wasn't necessarily making him a better filmmaker.
As long as that's the only body part he's showing, I think we're all okay with that. That said, I did look it up. Peaceful Warrior was a limited release. Jeepers Creepers 3 was intended for wide theatrical release. It was going to be like 1 and 2 everywhere. That's not what happened, but that was the entire intent by the studio. by Salva himself, Screen Media Films was intending that this would be at a theater near you, when in fact, it was at a theater nowhere near me.
Here's the thing. That was part of the reason why we put it on here. Originally, it was going to be Cloverfield. They moved Cloverfield. Thank God we got rid of Cloverfield because it's not even coming out in February. And so when we heard this was going to be a big theatrical release, I was like, all right, well, it's a trilogy. It makes sense for Platinum. But then all of a sudden, I found out it's in theaters one night only on my birthday. Like, I have to do this to myself as a birthday present if I want to see it.
Well, I found out that night they were actually having it the next week also for one night only. So at least in one theater, it was two nights on like a Wednesday, or is it a Thursday?
Here's how it all worked out. It was going to be wide theatrical release, but for whatever reason, I think probably just the internet has exploded as a means of communication and social media. Awareness of Salva's past has increased, and there were widespread protests about this film. And so it got pulled from theatrical release. But Fathom Events was going to do a one-night showing September 26th. And we did this before. It was Rob Zombie's 31. We had to go to a Fathom event in Washington, D.C. while on vacation and things like that. So I'm thinking, hey, maybe it'll be in our town. It was not in our town for whatever reason. It's not like AMC didn't do it, but they didn't do it here in Springfield. They did it in the college town of Edwardsville. So we had about a 80-minute drive each way. We get down there. They've added a second screen. So they were showing it on two screens because they'd sold so many tickets, and it was packed. I didn't expect a movie that everyone was boycotting and saying, no, we're not going to go see this. Everybody went to see that night.
And I can confirm that I was on vacation in Austin, Texas.
Alamo Drafthouse.
I sucked it up and I was like, let me just go. And it was sold out. Days before, when I went to go buy a ticket online, it also was sold out. So limited release, it's kind of like the Blair Witch Project. In some ways, by making it so unavailable for most people, it made it seem like a hot ticket. When if they had put it out in 3,000 theaters, it probably would have bombed.
It was so successful, they did an encore performance with Fathom Events on October 2nd. And it's also a perfect release time. Everybody's getting in the mood for Halloween. Everybody's in the mood for horror films. It was one of Fathom Events' six events to gross over $2 million that year. It was up there with Newsies, the Broadway musical, The Christian Is Genesis History, The In Our Hands, The Battle for Jerusalem, Pokemon the Movie, I Choose You! And then Jeepers Creepers 3 with 2.2 million.
There could not be a group of more different films than that group. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I don't think the same people made all six of those films a hit. It's definitely hitting different niche markets. But yeah, you may be talking about what is the future of theatrical distribution. Very limited, one night only for the super fans to come out and show their support by sitting their butts in a seat. And then, yeah, what? Quickly, it's supposed to be on DVD. We weren't sure about that. To my surprise, channel flipping a few nights before Halloween. What's on next? Sci-Fi Channel is playing Jeepers Creepers 3. Huh?
That was a shock to me when you told me that, because I follow a lot of horror sites and I keep up with horror movie news and rumors, and I had heard nothing about this. And in researching, it turns out that I hope we don't suffer this. We just released part one when we're recording this, but a lot of horror sites suffered extreme backlash and Twitter hatred for posting news about Jeepers Creepers. And those sites have come out and said, okay, we're just not going to post about anything Salva does anymore. So none of my horror sites talked about Jeepers Creepers at all. It was virtually impossible to find articles behind the scenes with this. There was just so little coverage of this movie beyond the protests about it by the mainstream media. But yes, it did have a Sci-Fi Channel premiere October 28th, and then it hit DVD, Blu-ray, and video on demand December 26th. Merry Christmas!
the day after. You can't even buy it as a Christmas gift.
Somehow it made it to Redbox by like December 23rd because I had pre-ordered this on Amazon to be sure I had it on release day. And whew, I saved myself that $10. Our local Redbox had it.
Yeah. You had already tipped us off that this one, when you saw it in theaters, wasn't going to be your favorite. That I should lower my expectations once I finally got a handle on it. I skipped watching it on Sci-Fi. I figured it would edit out whatever violence was there, and I couldn't get into the theatrical screening. The only way I could see it was Redbox.
In the theater, I only got to see half the movie because I had an incident with AMC where they apparently were backed up on their kitchen, and while I was dealing with that, I missed half the movie.
Some might see that as a godsend.
I did chug a beer during that 30 minutes because it was either that or scream at them because I was hangry because we drove over an hour to get there, and we had planned on having dinner down there, but it was packed, and that AMC was just a mess. They had terrible customer service. It was just awful.
Yeah, we were in a line just to get our tickets. Their self-check kiosk was broken. It was a pain in the ass, but I was excited to see it at a packed theater. We were able to get two seats together. It was actually difficult. We got the last two seats together in the theater, back row though, not horrible seats. I thought seeing this with an audience is the best way to see it. These people were animated. Yeah, they were on their phone a lot at the beginning and the end. They just were the kind of crowd who didn't put their phones away at movies, if you follow what I'm saying. It's not like they were bored and pulled them out. They just started with them out. But I was really happy to see this under the best possible circumstances. And while I have told you to lower your expectations, Stuart, I did not lower mine before going into theaters. I was excited. First Jeepers Creepers in 15 years. Bring it on. I wanted to see the Creeper. I had missed him. I've missed monster slasher films. We just haven't seen any survive.
Yes, you were hungry to get back to the original. I don't think anyone was hungry after the second course. Jeepers Creepers 2 sucked.
I hadn't revisited them. My memory was one was great and two was okay. My memory was wrong on two.
Yeah, you were.
But that was my memory of it, having not seen it since probably theaters, maybe once on video. So yeah, I was excited. I'm not just Wishmaster, but I'm thinking Freddy tried to come back and didn't make it. Jason tried to come back and didn't make it. Yeah, we're going to get some Michael Myers later this year. Not quite a monster on the level of the other two, but it just feels like we haven't had a good 80s type slasher flick in a while. We talked ghosts with Insidious. Horror movies have gone more that way. I was so happy to get back to a man in a rubber suit.
It's all cyclical though. I am guaranteeing that we will come back full circle to Maniacs at some point in the next 10 years. And so we'll get our slasher flicks. We'll get our creepy guys wearing masks. I mean, you also right now got that little subset trying to come back with the Your Next movie with the people in the masks that are stalking, kind of like that, like Eden Lake. So that's kind of poking its head up, and that I think will open the door maybe to slasher films if this latest installment of The Strangers does well.
Speaking of comebacks, obviously if there are widespread protests against the showing of this film, it has everything to do with Victor Salva. And Victor Salva said that he didn't even want to make a sequel to Jeepers Creepers. Why can't they hand this off to somebody else that won't get protested, that will be allowed to be screened non-controversially throughout the country? Why is Victor Salva still holding on? Why hasn't whoever owns this property moved on to a new director?
I'm pretty sure Victor Salva owns this property. There is no studio involved with this film that was involved in the previous ones, not even American Zoetrope.
Yeah, they don't exist anymore. There's nothing Francis Ford Coppola could do but drink his wine.
And MGM had it. The plan was, right after Jeepers Creepers 2, they were going to do Jeepers Creepers 3, The Creeper Walks Among Us. MGM was looking at making it direct-to-video because of Jeepers Creepers 2's performance. They couldn't scrape up the money. Then they had another script that Salva wrote, Jeepers Creepers 3 Cathedral, with Gina Phillips returning as Trish Jenner. And it had a lot of false starts. I kept thinking this movie was coming a long time before it did. Salva said in an interview that the film came close to happening many times before going on cameras, and he was hoping somebody would finance this. He finally got it in 2015 from Myriad Pictures to film in 2016. And this one filmed in Vancouver. You know, the first one was Florida. The second one was California. The third one was Vancouver. And it had a lot of production problems. I think one of the biggest problems is the casting call asked for an 18-year-old girl to play a 13-year-old girl. And a lot of Canadian booking agencies would not allow their actors to audition for this film. They had trouble getting people in front of the camera all because of Salva.
Yeah, again, it begs the question, if he doesn't want to do it and they could make more money, encounter less roadblocks with other creative forces, why not? Why is Victor still wanting to do this? You can't tell me that this film that we're here to talk about today was the film that he wanted to make. This feels very much like the compromise film he made because it was all the money he was given to make it with.
I also think, you know, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but, you know, we talked about his past on the prior two podcasts and how there's a lot of imagery in the first two movies. And I think a lot of that was lacking. And I kind of feel like there was some sort of restriction going on as to, Victor, we cannot have any shirtless males in this movie.
Yeah, I definitely think once we get into this movie, we can see that it doesn't even have the spirit of the first two films.
Yeah, one of your sets of peepers is just going to snooze during this entire review, I think. And there's only one set of peepers to watch this movie with. But why does Salva want to do it? As you can imagine, Salva doesn't talk very much and almost never to interviewers. I mean, there's pretty much only one question to ask him, even to this day. And the person doing all the press for this was Jonathan Breck, the Creeper. He's the one who did the talks at the Fathom event, you know, the bonus thing we saw at Fathom event. It was also the only bonus feature on the Blu-ray was that Fathom events Q&A. So you didn't even need to see the Fathom events for that, unlike the Rob Zombie 31 stuff. And there was no commentary, anything. But you see a man who wants to make movies. He is continually driven to make movies. And this was a chance to get another theatrical release. And in Hollywood, I honestly believe your scandal is less important than how your last movie did. If he could get a hit out there, he might be able to come back to the States and make one.
That might have been true up until last year. And now I really do think that reputation could trump box office. I mean, we'll discuss all of that as we get into the film. But yeah, he was making films. He made some thriller with Rose McGowan and he made something with Tobin Bell and they were going straight to tape and nobody seems to like them judging from their IMDb score. But he could continue to work. What it sounds like is Jeepers Creepers is the one opportunity he has to reach a mass audience.
Exactly. And so I think that's why he wouldn't let it go. And yes, the plot we're going to talk about wasn't his intent. It has been a long time. It's now 15 years since Jeepers Creepers 2 as of the recording here. And we're getting close to 23 years away from the original. Salva was wanting to do 23 years later, bring back Gina Phillips and have the Creeper wake up. A sequel to part two. That's not the film he did here. And yeah, he's never said why. Is it money? Is it cast? Was it availability? But it's not the film we're going to discuss.
Yeah. So let's discuss what it is. Arnie, give him the plot. We'll get through Jeepers Creepers 3.
Jeepers Creepers 3 picks up immediately after Jeepers Creepers 1 in the aftermath of Derry's abduction by the Creeper. We see our only returning main character, Sergeant Davis Tubbs. Everyone remember Tubbs, and I'm not talking Crockett and Tubbs.
Yeah, I had to go back to the first one to see, pick out which one this guy was. But he was, it's the same actor from Jeepers 1.
Yep, and he and his men are investigating the Creeper's truck, which had been parked outside and was full of lethal booby traps preventing anyone from going in. These cops are joined by Sheriff Dan Testego, a cop who knows the history of the Creeper and faced him down 23 years earlier. He's built a militia of people who survived the Creeper, and they're at Danny's beck and call to fight the beast. Danny also knows Galen Brandon, played by Meg Foster, an elderly woman whose son was killed by the Creeper 23 years earlier, but cut off the beast's hand and buried it in his mother's yard. She digs it up when Danny, Tubbs, and their men come. Danny holds hands with the still-alive dismembered limb and has a psychic vision about the beast's ancient history. We learn it's ancient.
They're not gonna tell us!
Meanwhile, the Creeper is killing some young people in town, primarily focusing on Galen's granddaughter Addison and her new beau, Buddy. He even captures Addison, throwing her in the back of his truck, but she uses his own booby traps against him and manages to escape. Her escape is shielded when Danny and his militia come to kill the Creeper. They do wound the beast, but every single cop and militia member is killed in the process. But Addison and Buddy escape back to Galen's house, and the next day they kiss goodbye as Buddy joins his basketball team on the school bus, the one we see destroyed in part two, as credits are teased. They don't roll until we jump 23 years into the future with a monologue by Trish Jenner, played again by Gina Phillips, putting out the call for people to band together and kill the Creeper when it awakens again, as credits really do roll.
Yeah, it is a big surprise. One that I did not figure out really until late into the movie, that we're in the same 23-day hunting cycle that we were for Jeepers 1 and Jeepers 2. That, yeah, because so much time had passed between 2 and 3, you would just naturally assume it's day one of a new hunting season, and we would be in, I don't know, 2023, some near future world where the Creeper could be stalking anyone and Trish is chasing it.
Yes, there was a huge missed opportunity, I think, here, because, you know, at the end of part two, you had Ray Wise's character waiting for the creature to reawaken, and I think it would have been really great to have either Trish or him hunting the Creeper, maybe with this whole SWAT team or whatever they are, the Creeper hunters that have the little patches even. I think they missed a huge opportunity here to set it in the next cycle using what we learned and know, and then maybe learning new stuff about the Creeper, because he's just kind of there in this one.
And might I say, Ray Wise has aged much better in real life than his character did in Jeepers Creepers 2.
Yes.
Having just seen him in person last year and on Twin Peaks last year, he's not nearly as decrepit.
He's very handsome still.
So we could have had him as a main character. Here's the thing, is I knew we were in the same 23-day cycle because of how the movie begins with the cops and his truck and saying the boy was taken. But I thought, I don't know why I thought this, but I thought we were still after part two. I hadn't seen part two in a long time. I remembered Ray Wise had him nailed to a barn side, but for some reason I thought that this was in parallel with part two or something. I didn't realize it was before part two until the very end. And part of the reason I didn't realize it was necessarily all the same cops, I knew some characters had to be returning. I had to look up each one. It turns out it's only that sergeant, but it felt like we were supposed to see other minor characters possibly returning from the first one. I wish we would have had our psychic. Where did she go? She just has never returned to this franchise. Instead, we have an entirely different subplot. I guess now that I've re-watched part two and seen the Creeper die, if we're in that 23-day cycle, it has to be before that. So we're going to squeeze this into the couple days between one and two.
And this is kind of trendy. I mean, I feel like the Saw films are known for this, right? You think it's a sequel, but actually it's happening simultaneously or just a few hours before the movie in previously. Insidious 4 was a prequel building up to Insidious 1. Sometimes it's considered clever when you can kind of shoehorn a story in the cracks, that this is happening in between 1 and 2. It might, to some people, be an appealing storytelling gimmick.
But did we need this to fill a crack between 1 and 2.
I would say I would be okay with it if it actually did. But although they're going to go back and tell us about that urban legend, if you remember, Gary and Trish are introduced talking about a couple dying on the road that they're traveling on. We're going to see that person. His name is Kenny Brandon. And in the prologue to this movie, he's driving a truck when some guy runs up to him and is snatched by the creeper.
Yeah, so we do begin 23 years earlier, but this isn't the story or the lovers that Derry found underground, because there was supposed to be a beheaded woman, too, somehow.
Oh, it is. Kenny will the next day go to prom and get taken.
Okay.
But this is the day before that, and I don't know how you still go to prom after you see a flying winged monster come down and snatch a man, and then a knife and a severed hand fall on the road. But that's what is established here in the prologue.
So that was that guy then?
Yes.
Yeah, that wasn't... They didn't do a good job at that.
No. We're going to have a prologue. Let's follow that. Let's have Kenny be the main character. No, he is going to be a ghost when we jump 23 days into the same hunting cycle we've been on. And he's talking to his mother, played by Meg Foster and named in the only gay reference in this movie, Galen Brandon.
A very awkward name. I don't know any women named Galen.
No, but I do know women named Gayla. Gail. I don't know, maybe it's a Canadian name or something.
I think that he just knows that this is something that he does. He works the word gay in there. He works a homoerotic subtext in there. For whatever reasons, and I'm not saying I miss it, he has decided not to include much more than Galen's name as part of that gamesmanship in Jeepers Creepers 3. Perhaps they did crack down on him and said, no more joking on this subtext.
Yeah, maybe, or maybe he just is over it. It's been almost 20 years. Maybe he's done with that self-exploration and wanting to just say, I can make a slasher film. But yeah, there's a group of four guys who are going to go off together, and they could go homoerotic like the book It does, a lot more than the movie It, but they don't go there, and the kids all keep their shirts on.
I would say this movie is strangely asexual, in fact, that there are so many characters in relationships, and none of it, for a horror movie, which is always predicated on sex and death, it's not here at all.
I was expecting to feel icky with this movie like I did with 1 and 2, and this is a huge departure from what he's done before, and I wonder if somewhere there is his director's cut that has his normal stuff in it. Because, I mean, he even did this in Powder. So the fact that it's missing, I kind of wonder if it's not the movie he wanted to make.
I'm sure of that.
There isn't a director's cut. There is a screener cut that was sent out before the Fathom event. And this gets a little bit icky.
Oh.
It's been icky, Arnie. It doesn't... let's continue to be icky. What happens in the screener cut?
Okay, let's follow what you're talking about here. Galen has the son who died at prom 23 years ago in the 70s.
And in Jeepers Creepers 1, we saw his body cemented to the wall under the church. Derry found him.
Yes, but Galen also has a granddaughter named Addison from, I believe, Galen's daughter?
Yes, it is not established in any of the past, but yes, there was a daughter who married somebody, and when it wasn't working out as a family unit, she chose her new husband and kicked her daughter back to her mother, Galen.
Yes, and if you watch that scene, and the granddaughter is Addison, who I talked about. She's our last girl. She's our, really, there's a lot of main characters in this, but I'd say she is, if you're going to pick one star for this movie other than the creeper, I think it would be her.
I guess. She looks like Kristen Stewart. Maybe they were thinking this is our Twilight character, but yeah, she is the least interesting main character that they have.
But there's the scene where they talk about her, why she lives with her grandmother. And it's a conversation between Buddy, the guy who's going to kind of become her boyfriend this movie, and Buddy's friend. And if you watch how that scene plays, and I didn't notice it the first time because I didn't know this. There's some weird shots where the person who's talking is not usually the person on frame. You're seeing the person listening because they overdubbed some stuff.
Oh no. Oh boy. What did they overdub?
There were no scenes showing this, but what that conversation was is that her stepfather was sexually abusing her and that she was sent, instead of divorcing the husband, the mother sent her to live with her grandmother. And then this is still in the movie a little bit. The jerky character says, "Can you blame the stepdad though? I mean, look at her. The heart wants what it wants, right?"
Ah. Yeah, in the cut of the movie, he sounds like he's reacting to being skeevy about the girl and saying, "Can you blame me for wanting to be with her?" But what he was really saying is, "You can't blame any father that would molest a daughter this hot." Okay, well, here's what I would say to that. At least it is showing that Salva is addressing what I feel like has been the subtext all along, and that we have an abuser that is going to look at a cycle of abuse. At least opens this up to a dimension that's interesting, when in fact this character never does anything interesting in this cut.
And I don't think that it changes her not doing anything interesting. They didn't cut a single frame. They merely changed the words. Instead of saying he was molesting her, to say they didn't get along. And instead of saying, "Can you blame the stepdad?" he says, "Can you blame me?" That is the only change that was made after intense public outcry, because every reviewer sent a screener copy pretty much focused only on that line.
Yeah, I get it. It's the white elephant in the room. It's a Victor Salva movie, and the main character was sexually molested. How can you not draw parallels? What does this mean?
Especially when the main character is 18, but playing, I suppose, a 13-year-old. She never comes off as 13, but...
She drove, though.
Yeah, maybe he aged her up after the casting agencies got wind of it. But what they were casting for was an 18-year-old who could play 13.
I mean, there's no way that that girl was 13 in that movie.
Right. And this is a change, too, because Victor Salva's MO has always been to feature boys as the targets. It was a surprise to find out that the creeper would be interested in female body parts. It kind of explains why he does take to her scent. Perhaps what Creeper is responding to when he smells victims is, yes, both fear and the fact that they've been touched before. He is linking this to a cycle of violence.
I don't know that we know if everybody on that bus was touched before.
Yeah, I agreed. And Derry, I mean, again, it begs all kinds of questions these flimsy little movies cannot answer. But again, I would welcome anything at this point that would deepen what I've been seeing. I feel like I've seen a very surface level movie, and now here's an opportunity to explore subtext that we all know is there, but the director hasn't been willing to talk about, and any effort to underline or go further with it was removed because of public outcry. Well, I don't think it would have helped. In the end, this character, granddaughter Addison, is here because horror movies feature young players, but she isn't the one that's interesting to me. The one that I gravitate towards is the one that's given like the star entrance. Sheriff Dan, hours after Derry's been grabbed, showing up at the police precinct with all the answers in a SWAT team of creeper guys that have matching jackets and patches with little skulls with wings on them. He seems to know everything we want to know about the creeper. I'm focused on Sheriff Dan throughout this movie.
Yeah, he just kind of showed up. But it's interesting that there's this SWAT team of creeper hunters or whatever, but yet they seem so unprepared and unknowledgeable about killing this guy. But then it also seems that his truck changed from the first movie too, so I'm not really sure what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, Stuart, you mean Creighton Duke from Jason Goes to Hell, The Final Friday? I didn't know this guy was the sheriff. I thought he was a bounty hunter in that hat and that coat and knowing everything about the creeper. I thought that for some reason they went to that Jason Goes to Hell and were like, we need that character in Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah, he does have that quality. And they may have been channeling that. Indirectly, he might have been copying that. It feels that close. But he's a character that has all the answers about the creeper. And yet, Marjorie brings up the real issue, is that even though he met him 23 years ago, we don't know what happened there. We don't have a flashback that establishes what that battle was, what Sheriff Dan went through, if he learned how to hurt this creature. He has been going around and collecting all the left behind, the orphans, the people whose creeper has preyed upon their family and they want revenge. And so he has guys now that are willing to die, kamikaze style, as long as it means taking out the creeper this time. We know they're not going to do it because we've seen Jeepers Creepers 2. If you figured out this is happening in between Jeepers Creepers 1 and 2, the mystery is spoiled. But I think they muddy that water intentionally. I don't think we're really supposed to realize that. And they're just constantly doing things that are disruptive to the timeline, including the fact that they have a truck that is pimped out with a cannon that I think is the truck from Jeepers Creepers 2, but isn't. It's mentioned that it's an old man's truck with a Vulcan cannon, but it's not Ray Wise's truck.
That's what I thought too, is because it was the exact same truck almost. Same MO and everything. They got all the gun in the back and everything. I thought that this was taking place in the future, and this was that one kid that was left, because it wasn't one of Ray Wise's sons left.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought this was him.
Yes, exactly so. They said 23 years later, and we naturally assume we're 23 years beyond the first two movies, that someone shows up in this truck. It isn't the same make truck, and if you look closely, this is a cannon. It's a gun, whereas before it was a post puncher. It was meant to, you know, set up fences. They turned it into a harpoon. Ray Wise recalibrated it so that it was a weapon. So if you are paying very close attention and are very studied in the first two movies, you've caught them. Otherwise, yeah, you're in for the rug being pulled out. Somewhere in the middle of this movie, you'll figure out that this is in fact still the same cycle.
And can we talk about the cars for a second? Because this movie really messes with me as far as time period, because they've all got cell phones, but for some reason, this is the only area of the country where they're driving old-timey cars from the 50s and 60s. And I'm not sure why. Was this a style choice or what was going on with the cars? Because Derry and Trish drove an older car. People in that movie also drove an older car. Ray Wise had an old-timey pickup truck. And I'm guessing this is still the late 90s, as they've got cell phones.
Flip phones and not smartphones, I noticed. So they did keep that period correct. If you were paying attention to the model of cell phone, you'd be like, that kid would have an iPhone. And he does not, because they don't exist yet.
The only thing that felt new were those four boys' motorbikes. And even those could have been around in 2001 when the first movie came out, but they didn't feel 50s the way most of the cars did.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that some people try to go with generic cars so they don't date their movies. They want them to feel timeless. But here, this feels like Happy Days based upon the vehicles. So I agree with you. I really noticed at this time that they were going to the hop.
You could attribute it to being a rule, and maybe they're out of it. They don't have the latest things. I think it had more to do with the time warp feeling of this was a place that hadn't changed since the last time the creeper had stalked it, that maybe they were scarred by it. And yet so few people seem to know about the creeper. There's so many script problems and choices that have been made to leave you unsatisfied and unable to tighten the mythology that I don't want to dig too deep in it. It doesn't seem like it will reward at all to do so.
No, Danny gives us the biggest speech. I mean, this is before he holds hands with the dismembered limb. He goes, "Fear has a scent. It could sample fear right out of the air. That's how it picks what parts of us to eat, and it eats to rebuild itself. It never hunts in the same place for more than a day. It's done with Poho County. All we can do now is head north and follow the birds." How does he know this?
I don't know, but I'm grateful. Again, I presume he knows this because he had some kind of mano-mano in, I guess it would have been 1968 or whatever it was. The last time Creeper was around, he was there and learned all of these things. I thought it was really strange we never get that flashback to establish him. He's put as such a badass, but we'd never really learn his story. He will tell Galen's story, but he seems to have no story to reveal. And it feels part of the shabbiness of the screenplay that they have no answers for any question you might want to ask.
Yeah, and the question I really want to ask, okay? I had a problem in part one, less so in part two, because part two, the creeper was at his most bestial, right? He had a couple of weapons. He had some throwing stars he used to take out tires, but primarily he was flying around and he was grabbing kids out of the bus, out of the field. He was just a hunting animal licking some glass. In part one, I had a problem because he was driving, he had vanity plates, he had all of this stuff going on. They're going to take whatever problem I had in part one and multiply it by 1,000, because now he has a Pimp My Ride truck that has all kinds of booby traps. Is he working with Jigsaw from Saw to have his truck work just so? How in the hell did he get a harpoon that's made of bone that fires from the tailpipe and all this shit in the truck?
I actually think that they didn't have the money to do much makeup. They keep it very limited when they show us the creeper. I think the truck is supposed to be the replacement. We're sorry we can't give you more scenes of the creeper doing bad things, but we'll have this awesome truck that will bring us back to the dual kind of origins of this story, and it can do all these awesome things. And I think we're supposed to fear the truck at least as much, if not more, than the creeper.
It's freaking Goliath from Knight Rider, the super truck driven by Garth, because it's bulletproof. Even military level Vulcan bullets bounce off of it. It can drive itself when the creeper steals it from the impound tow truck. What the hell?
Yeah, and this is a disappointment too, because if one thing has been consistent in this series, they've had a good grabber at the beginning. They do something in the setup that's like, it'll hook you, and then eventually, I always found that my attention wandered, and by the midway point, I didn't care anymore in both movies. But here, I don't even feel like this beginning at the tow truck driver and the deputy is particularly grabbing. It's the poster shot. We see that he reclaims it with his axe and stands atop of it. It kind of glides by ghostly. Looks good on a poster, but this isn't a really scary moment, and it tells me that this isn't going to be a very scary movie.
And I feel that the creeper is living inside the game Diablo or World of Warcraft, because he's leveled up. Oh, now I have an axe. Now I have a javelin. Now I have a throwing star. It's like he's gotten lots of loot.
Yep, and all supplied by the truck. And yeah, the truck has a fake exhaust pipe that actually speared the sheriff's hat. And I mean, some of this could work. I mean, I'm not opposed to finding out the truck could do more than we've seen in the previous two movies, but it isn't scary. I guess that's the bottom line.
My grandmother can't figure out how to change the input back on her television when she hits the wrong button, but this ancient creeper can build a super truck?
Yeah, he stayed with the times, I guess. I mean, again, I don't want to ask these deep, logical questions because I know I'm not rewarded for doing so. The mythology is not tight. It isn't even coherent. The question has always been, how long can they keep me in suspense before they drop the ball? And the answer is, they never get me in suspense with Jeepers Creepers 3. It's never scary. And we can tell that when, he turns around. What does he want? Again, I thought he wanted body parts. Now it just seems like he's killing everyone he meets. But he takes the tow truck driver and leaves the woman behind.
Here's the problem, though, and why you have to ask these questions. We have three movies that you watch in, 1, 3, 2 order, and they're taking place over the same time period in, 4 days, and in each one of these, successively, the creeper gets upgrades, and it's changing and evolving in these 4 days. So you kind of have to ask these questions, because I have a hard time when the first movie, yes, it came out 16 years ago or however many years ago, the creature is starkly different than it is in the last one. Because of all these upgrades and changes and everything, it should just be the same. If they're gonna keep, changing his truck or changing the way he does things, we need to have a different time period. And maybe they made a mistake by doing that every 23 years.
You've inspired me.
Oh, shit.
Because I now have a thought. You say he needs to change. What's he constantly doing but changing physically? He's getting new hands. He's getting new heads. Maybe he gets new brains, and that's how he pimped the truck, is he stole Exhibit's brain. Remember Exhibit from MTV?
Sure. Pimp My Bride.
He got Exhibit's head and put it on, and now he could pimp his truck. And then he got a military guy's head, and he could do strategy.
But my point is, it's not like you can retrofit an old Army World War I ambulance with those giant spikes that come down every time someone tries to escape out the back in like 3 hours.
We never got in the truck really before. The creeper opened the truck and threw body parts in there, but we never saw anyone get in the truck in part one. The truck didn't even exist in part two, so we're exploring new territory with these booby traps.
But don't defend this movie.
Well, you're kind of making me. And the one thing that I'll say that is not a defense of this movie, though, is just what you said, Marjorie. This is the third movie. By the third movie, you've got to get your shit together. In Freddy 3, we got Dream Warriors, and he started becoming a bit jokey, and that would be his defining trait. In Friday the 13th, Part 3, Jason got his MO down, and he got his hockey mask. The third movie of a horror franchise is where, if you've been a little bit aimless and wandering up to this point, you get your shit together, and this Part 3 just falls apart.
And I want to point out, those Part 3s were made by different people than made the Part 1. That someone else, a fan of this series, would come in and say, I've always had these questions, and I want answers, and I'm going to put them here. And yeah, third parts of trilogies, you definitely learn the origins. I mean, that's a classic, that you just learn the origins of where the evil came from. That's the tease that they make here, that we aren't going to find it, that they're going to leave it dangling for a Part 4 or Part 5, something else down the road. Huge mistake. It leads us to ask, what is the point of Part 3? I think the point of Part 3 is to chase around a dead hand. The whole plot is built around the idea that even though he replaces body parts all the time, the creeper wants to reclaim his original claw, because if people touch it, they can know it, his secrets.
My memory of this was a little bit wrong, because I saw this in theaters, I put that memory away as a painful experience of 2017, and then I rewatched it for this review in the first days of 18, not a good way to start a year, and I had thought that when Creighton Duke or Danny or whatever we're calling him in this movie grabs that hand, that we had this apocalyptic vision of Christ's crucifixion and body parts and the creeper having many creepers back then.
Yeah.
And that we'd find out it was the last of his kind now. But he, when you say ancient, he was there when the pharaohs built the pyramids. He was there when Christ was nailed to a cross. I really thought, and I think I was getting confused with Phantasm now, because we were reviewing those right around that time.
Mm-hmm.
But I really thought that when Danny had his vision, we'd see what he sees, and it would be impressive, and the visual spectacle of this installment to show us the history. The fact that when he grabs that hand, people hold him down, and he gets those white, milky eyes, and then he just comes back and goes, it's ancient. And that's it?
No, it's horrible how little Sheriff Dan knows, how much we learn about his story, how much he learns about the creeper before he's killed. I can't believe this is the movie that Salva wanted to make, but I think if someone else were handed this script, they would have at least answered these questions. That he is teasing this almost like saying, I'll tell you next time, as a way of guaranteeing more work, and not because it's right for the storytelling. He knows he should be telling us these details by this point. And again, I beg of you, what is the main character? What is the main point, if not to get to this hand? I think that that in some ways makes Galen the main character. Meg Foster is the one that everyone thinks is the crazy old lady on the farm who went mad because her son was killed, but in fact, the son is still alive in ghost form because he is a part of the creeper. And when the creeper is around, that means the ghosts of the body parts he's made up of can haunt people. We've seen that before. Jeepers Creepers 2, we saw Derry standing at a cornfield. I guess this is just another version of that, with Kenny standing by where he buried the hand.
Okay, you've helped explain something, because when watching this, I said to Marjorie, what, there's ghosts now? But she reminded me of Derry in part two. And now that you're saying, if you're a part of the creeper and the creeper is around, you're able to become a ghost. Okay, I'll go with that. The movie never tells me that, but no. I like it.
I wouldn't even go so far as to say I like it, but it is at least a framework. We are starting to build a mythology in our own minds because the director is not doing so conclusively anyway. But where does that leave us for the movie? Okay, so the hand is the MacGuffin that everybody wants.
But when they get it, it does nothing. The MacGuffin has to have a point.
And half the movie is not about finding the hand. It's about Addison trying to find some hay.
Yeah.
For her horse, Rocket.
That was a really long sequence that was unnecessary when it doesn't pay off anywhere in this movie.
It's her character arc that she's poor, but she's going to find love, and that she has had a crush on
Freckles.
And Freckles has had a crush on her. I think his name's Buddy.
Here's the thing. I couldn't get his name. I got her name Addie, and I got Galen because they were screaming so much. But I never got his name as Buddy. And I just halfway through the movie started calling him Freckles.
Yeah, it works. And Freckles, it happens to work for the guy that has all the hay in town, so he can do something for her. He's wooing her. I get the sense that she has difficulty loving, maybe because of what you've said is in her backstory, but he is definitely trying to court her by giving her the hay her horse needs, and then just not wanting that moment to end. He's like, well, let me invite you to some other farm where I gotta deliver hay, and we can have a replay of Jurassic Park.
I do like that the guys are so afraid that they won't go to the barn. There's two guys under a truck, and the owner of the farm is a little bit disabled. He has a cane, he says, so he can't go to the barn to call for help. His farm hands are too scared to go to the barn to call for help, so it's up to Buddy to try to go to the barn and call for help.
Again, but we're just meeting these random people. They've never been established in any earlier scene. They have nothing to do with the buried hand or anything that happened 23 years ago. Some of the men claim they know who the creeper is, but we've never seen a flashback with them in it.
You're hitting on my biggest complaint about this movie. There's too many damn characters. We haven't even talked, and if I don't bring it up right now, I don't think we'll ever talk about Addison's best friend, the girl who she goes to visit in the morning, and she has a brother who's trapping rabbits because he's cruel, and then he has three motorbike and friends, and they go out and piss on the creeper's truck, and the creeper kills three of them, but one of them gets away because he runs, and then the creeper smells the urine and goes after him. There's a large body count in this movie because there's a shit ton of characters in this movie, but we're not given time to care about any of them.
And it's not that there's too many characters for me, it's that they aren't working together. It's the fact that the guys on the motorbikes have nothing to do with the girl back home, who has nothing to do with her best friend who's trying to get hay, who just is meeting this guy on the farm who we'll never see again, and what that has to do with the sheriff and the deputy riding around with a militia, or the crazy woman at the farm. I mean, they're just all strewn to the wind, and what you really appreciate about any story is the way that it can bring people together for a common goal. If they all want to fight the creeper, they all need to be in the same farm. They all need to be in the same school bus. They all need to be working towards the same goal. But it's like four different little mini movies stuck together.
Yeah, what was missing was the common thread of everyone either running from or trying to save somebody from the creeper. And Arnie's right, too many characters. Being said, if I only remember two names, I can't even tell you the guy that hung around with the sheriff, because all I remember is he was a stereotype cop. I don't even know his name.
Tubbs. He's fat.
Yeah.
Tubbs? Okay.
I only remember that because of Miami Vice. But there's no cause and effect. Nobody even mourns those four bikers. Nobody even notices they're gone. I don't think we ever see Addison's friend again or her mother again. If they, like, joined the militia because
they're at the end, they set the rabbit free.
Oh, that's right. But they're not part of the creeper story.
No. If the story is about getting a hand, any character that is not surrounding that farm where the hand is buried should not be in this movie. I understand the need for Salva to put four boys on motorbikes and send them off for some kills. And I do think it's actually, as far as suspense pieces go, the best sequence in the movie. Help me. It's not particularly good. But I do think the best scene in the movie is when these guys come across a truck in the woods and try to figure it out. But it has no relevance, so it should go.
Yeah. There needs to be a through line where their death impacts somebody in a way that then motivates them to do something.
Right, and I think, like, the sheriff's only motivation is what happened in the past. He has no idea about the motorbikers or that Addie's gone or anything like that.
And the only gay subtext I could find in this movie is I feel that the sheriff and the sergeant argue like an old married couple.
Aww, they were kind of cute together, weren't they? They both chewed up that scenery in every scene they're in.
But our character that doesn't know anything is Tubbs, so this sheriff should be explaining what he knows. When he tells him a story, he tells him a story about Galen, who we already knew that story. It's frustrating that there is so little information being given out. It's like Victor Salva claims he has all the answers, but you're not getting a single one until Jeepers Creepers 4.
Yeah, that is a pisser.
And he's not good with anything anymore. The suspense is gone. The comedy is gone. I think there's a whole Sam Raimi attempt at a severed hand joke where it's running around the farmhand grabbing people and being put under clay pots that's supposed to be funny in the way that the severed hand of Bruce Campbell was funny in Evil Dead 2. But this is where the movie, I mean, it's difficult to be watching the screen an hour into this film. It is so disjointed. It is so dispassionate that, yeah, my mind was just wandering to other tasks of the day.
Yeah, but one thing that I thought that they did really well is the scenery and the imagery that they did. There were a lot of beautiful shots that were really well composed that looked really epic, and then it delved into some crap scene. But I mean, there are numerous shots of the creeper extending his wings and like almost like freezing and then moving in slow-mo over like a beautiful countryside with the sun behind him. And then, you know, he goes on to do whatever he was doing. But I feel like some of those were really well set up. Now, I don't know that they were an entire reason to watch this movie. They weren't that great. But I thought some of it was really pretty. And I think the one that was really striking was where he's getting shot by the sheriff and the black smoke is coming out the back of the creature. And it's just really pretty because it's wispy. It's kind of in slow motion. It's kind of lingering in the air. And I thought that was really nice.
I agree that Salva, if nothing else, and perhaps nothing else, he has a firm grasp on composition that would make great spreads in Fangoria magazine, but don't really hold up in this movie.
Yeah, it feels like he was shooting for a trailer. Like, he was literally making this movie as a way of advertising that they should let him make another movie that will be good. And so you can see, yeah, in those shots, they are posters. They are still images you would use to market this film. And in those moments, you're teased a movie much better than what you're given when you see the scene. If there were a sequel, who would come back? We know Sheriff gets taken out here. His militia, I don't think they're all dead, but the one that we followed, the one that was orphaned at 10, that gets in the old man's truck and tries to shoot down the truck on the highway, dies by ricocheting bullets. Would they bring back Meg Foster? She seems to be touched. She's the only one alive that knows the creature's secret, and the hand is destroyed now. She nailed it for it to find, and it crushed it to dust. That was kind of dumb.
I was kind of hoping for like a Trish revenge story. I mean, that would be, I think, awesome. Especially like that little bit they did at the end of this movie with her dialogue. I think that her avenging Derry's death and actually killing the creeper or pulling the Ray Wise, you know, waiting for him to wake up again kind of thing would be really cool.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's obviously what they're teasing, but I'm saying of this cast, Trish was in the movie in the last 10 seconds.
Yeah.
But of all of these characters we're complaining there's too many of, who here would we want to continue on?
None.
Who here did anything that was useful?
I don't think any of them did anything useful.
Addison found out that the inside of the truck has some booby traps. I mean, I guess he lost Derry's eye already.
Yes.
I mean, no sooner has he put in his eyes, Jeepers Creepers, but then he gets his head impaled by his own death gadget.
Yeah, I found that to be interesting. I also realized, hey, that's Derry's eye that popped out. And then he has trouble trying to throw the harpoon because he only has one eye. And he's like, do I aim it this way? Do I aim it that way? How do I aim it?
But if she's the main character, I mean, she just kind of wanders off into the dark. The deputy just kind of wanders off. You're either killed or you wander away.
Yeah, I don't think anyone is remarkable or memorable enough to continue in another installment. Even as, you know, an aged self, or I don't know if the next one would be on the fifth day or how this goes, or maybe we'll get the 23rd day. I'm not really sure. But everyone was so blah and didn't really serve a purpose. I mean, the sheriff could have been so much more.
I don't think Freckles died. I mean, we see him get on the school bus with the other jocks.
I thought he died because I was taking that as he died because, I mean...
None of those guys died. There was like three guys that died. And
oh,
the rest
right.
of them just wandered off. So it's not like it's a tragedy that he's going to have another night with the creeper. He wasn't in any of the ones that got the crawl or got eaten.
Yeah, but I don't think we need Freckles back.
Again, what have they offered us? A bunch of lightweight C-list characters who tried to find out something about the creeper and then wouldn't tell us.
And we see the creeper at the end limp away injured. We never see him injured that way when he goes after that school bus. And Freckles was not on that school bus.
He was not.
No, the actor certainly wasn't there. He's not a returning character in any way. He could have been in the background, but I don't know. I feel like we would have noticed him.
Yeah. Plus, shouldn't somebody on the bus go, oh shit, it's that monster I fought yesterday.
Yeah, good point about that. But again, they're so busy being clever here by fooled you with the timeline that they don't realize that they're the fool. I mean, this looks stupid. The one thing that I thought was kind of cool in these final moments was that the creeper, when he realizes that somebody knows his secret, he finds the note and the hand, it was dug up, but his secret is already exposed. He screams to the heavens, falls to his knees. Not my favorite move usually, but it kills all the crows. And you realize that you could hunt this thing very easily. Everywhere it goes, birds follow. So I don't know why these SWAT teams are having any trouble finding him.
And I don't know why his howl of pain causes birds to rain from the sky and his face opens up like in part one. That was kind of fun.
Well, you know, he has a scream about him. Earlier during the Jurassic Park ripoff, he screamed and broke the window. I mean, that's one of his powers, I suppose, is that ear-piercing sound. But what have we learned about the creeper? He can go with women. He has a really cool truck that has lots of booby traps. And nothing. That's all I got.
He only hunts in the same town for one day.
But same county is okay.
But he's doubling back here only to reclaim the hand, which I would presume in 23 years, many people have already studied.
But it was buried for 23 years.
How would he know that? I guess because the body part was in him to tell him.
And then, yeah, they leave the hand that says, we know what you are, but okay. We don't know as the audience what you are.
Yeah, anyway.
So Marjorie Stewart, do you recommend Jeepers Creepers 3? Marjorie.
On one hand, I want to give this movie props for really not being icky and making me feel like I need a Silkwood shower after watching it. Are you okay there?
Just not expected reference.
Yeah. Oh. It's quite on point.
Yeah. But that being said, this movie just got... so much worse than two. It's way too many people. You're left with so many questions that I don't even know if I want them answered at this point because I'm so frustrated. I'm still disappointed that they really haven't used the Jeepers Creepers song more than in the first one because I think that that would have been a great touchstone for the creeper.
Yeah, at one point, one of those bikers goes, isn't this the guy who sings the song? I've never seen the creeper sing.
Right. So, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, just like we all know that, Jason has the sounds when he appears on screen, I mean, that would have been a great calling card for the creeper, but I digress. This movie was flat, dull, non-interesting. There's no reason for this movie to be made. On the plus side, it isn't icky, so I can't recommend it just in general because it's a horrible movie. But again, positive, not icky.
And pretty shots.
Oh yeah, there were some pretty shots, you're right. But again, not worth seeing the movie for those pretty shots. Not at all.
Stuart.
Yeah, I was reminded of Phantasm 2, Arnie. I was thinking about that fourth one, Oblivion, where they also didn't have the money to make the movie they wanted to make. And so they made this kind of, taken from old archive footage and a few scenes out in the desert, a setup for that film. I recommended that. Ultimately, I thought that there was enough there that Phantasm fans would want to know that they would be hungry for another installment. Here, I can't imagine that anyone had ever liked this series. series had their appetite sated. I mean, honestly, if you're a gore hound and you wanted the horror, the suspense was the strongest part about that first film. I think it's why people have stuck with Salva, despite all of his personal baggage. But there's no scary moments in this film. There is no sense of suspense. There is no answers to what his creature's origin is. If you're trying to see that this convicted child molester is showing atonement, like Peaceful Warrior, and that he's going to use this to conclude some point about his past crimes, not here at all. I guess it makes it less icky, as Marjorie points out, but it also makes it unsatisfying for any kind of subtextual reading. I just don't know why you would want more. They tell us that Trisha will be back next time. If that's a grabber, I guess, but I'm done. I think that this has been pretty much start to finish a bad series, and the worst note is Jeepers Creepers 3.
Agreed. Victor Salva's worst crime is the one for which he went to jail. His second worst crime is what he's done to this series. I'm the one who was like, yes, let's do Jeepers Creepers, because I was excited to do it. Again, I wanted to champion that first film in the book. This movie pisses on that first film, and I don't think I like it anymore.
I don't know. You do like the first film.
I liked the first film in isolation, but this movie makes me not like the creeper anymore. It really doesn't. When there's no rules, when he uses weapons, when he's bulletproof, when he has a super van from Knight Rider, I'm not afraid of it anymore. And there's no suspense because he's death incarnate. He's more tough than the Terminator. There is absolutely no chance for anyone to do anything. There's no information about the creeper here, and there's no chance of ever stopping him, especially since this is an interquel. So no, this movie really sucks, and the only thing it killed is my love for the franchise. Yes, at the end we see Gina Phillips, who was not my favorite character from part one. It was Derry, not Trish, I liked.
There's a reason why Creeper picked the computer boy.
Yeah. So by the end of this movie, when I saw that, I should be like, yes, let's do that. Let's see the old characters come back. This should have been for Jeepers Creepers what seeing Vin Diesel at the end of Tokyo Drift was. And instead, it's like, well, no, I haven't seen that actress since Jeepers Creepers 1, and I really don't want to see her come back for Jeepers Creepers 4. I'm really let down by this franchise, and it's not creepy at all. What about you guys? Would you care for Jeepers Creepers 4 23 years later with at least Gina Phillips coming back, if no one else?
I think if it was directed by someone else who is going to give the creeper what he deserves as a monster instead of what we've been getting since after one.
I think you have to totally reboot it. Who cares about Trisha? It just, there's nothing to hold on to. And honestly, the baggage on Silva at this point is so heavy that they can't show the film without causing controversy. So you get rid of him. I mean, God knows they'll probably do something stupid and reboot it with Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, but the point is, you want this to be free of the kind of controversy that's going to plague it as long as Salva is at the helm. And I would support Salva at the helm if I ever felt like he was using this opportunity to talk about his crimes in a way that was understandable. But I feel like he's treated this predatory monster like a joke, or in this installment, asexually, where he just indiscriminately is killing everyone and is not hunting for specific body parts. I don't know what you have here, and I don't think there's much worth salvaging, but if they do bring it back, give it to someone else.
Yeah, so are we all agreed ranking 1, 2, 3 just keep getting worse?
Yes.
Sure, but I would argue that I don't think 3 is that much worse than 2. I thought 2 was pretty aimless as well, but at least it had Ray Wise.
Exactly, and he's always a nice guy.
Well, there are plans for Jeepers Creepers 4.
Oh, sure.
And according to Ray Wise, there's talk of a Creeper TV series that would take place 23 years after the trilogy.
No, I mean, there's always talk of a TV series because that's what they do with every property right now. I can't tell you how many times I've found out that something from the past is going to be remade into an episodic television series for Netflix. Sure, it's discussed. Is there any money behind it? And who's going to be at the helm? I just don't think that they have enough here. I could be wrong. There were sellout crowds for this movie. People wanted to see Jeepers Creepers 3. Are there enough of them after they've seen it to want to go forward? I tend to doubt it.
But as the sixth most successful Fathom event of 2017, maybe somebody will see there's money in it.
And our audience reaction was good. People were having...
Laughing.
Yeah.
They were laughing. At the start of the movie, the people were screaming like they really wanted to be scared. By the midway point, when the guy's holding the hands, the audience was just laughing at every supposed scare.
But that's still a good reaction.
I mean, if it would be lucky to go on to have some kind of cult status as a beloved bad movie, but I don't even think it's that. It's a dull movie, honestly. You spend the whole movie waiting for something to happen that, yes, they promised to do the next time. I don't know that I believe them. Wouldn't Victor Salva just make part four a tease for part five?
I'll admit, I came close to being a little nicer to this film because when I watched it in theaters, it was terrible. But when I watched it at home with Marjorie and we were able to just rip on it together like we did The Room, it was fun to do that. I had fun talking shit about this movie while I watched this movie about how stupid it was. So there is some enjoyment. I did wonder, is it so bad it's good? But no.
No, it's definitely not that kind of bad.
But what it is the end of our donation series. It ends on a bit of a down note, and I apologize that we picked such a shitty new movie to review, but who knew? I guess Canadian acting agencies knew.
And we did also have confirmation that coming out on DVD and Blu-ray in February is the 10th installment of Hellraiser. Judgment will be coming out, and you will be getting it towards the end of February, early March. So as a platinum donor, we know that you're automatically, you're definitely going to get that treat, that gift from hell. I don't know what it's going to be like. Hopefully it's better than the last couple Hellraisers. That's all I ask.
That's true. I said that we're ending on a down note. Maybe not.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hesitant to put too much hope into a direct-to-video Hellraiser because if you go to a dog and it bites you, that's the dog's fault. If you go to the dog six times and it bites you every time and you keep going back, at some point you got to take some personal responsibility. So I'm hoping for the best and expecting revelations.
Manage your expectations.
But in between, there is another bit of donation series starting February 1st. No, we're not intentionally upping our number of donation series per year. We like doing two donation drives, but damn them for coming out with Day of the Dead Bloodline, a follow-up to our George Romero remake series. This is an official remake of the George Romero Day of the Dead movie. It's the second official remake of that. And so February and March, we're not going to talk about it a lot, so you're going to have to be a little bit more on the ball. We're not trying to hit people up too often for money, but it will be available. We'll be bringing out of the vault our Living Dead retrospective series, the Romero Living Dead, the Living Dead remakes, Return of the Living Dead, and Evil Dead as various levels of donation. If you don't want to get them individually from Podbean, and each one is available per episode on Podbean, you'll be able to save a little bit of money by buying in packages and getting them directly from us, but only for 2 months, February and March. And everyone who's ever donated for the 5th anniversary DVD-ROM set or the Living Dead remake retrospective that we did in 2012, or if they got it through Kickstarter, you guys are all going to get Day of the Dead Bloodlines review for free automatically. If you didn't subscribe to those series during their original offerings, we're going to open it up and give it another shot. And real quick, we do want to mention also that if you're one of our patrons, you also got our exclusive review of The Wizard. So that is available. And thank you for making this show possible. Your donation has helped us do all the theatrical releases we're doing this year. Black Panther, Death Wish, Tomb Raider, Pacific Rim, Ready Player One, New Mutants, Rampage, Avengers, Cloverfield 3, Solo, Deadpool, Ocean's 8, Incredibles 2, Ant-Man, The Nun, Mission Impossible, Predator. So many. But you make them possible, as well as what we're doing in between those releases, the Now Playing Arcade. We started this past Tuesday with The King of Kong, and now we're going to go to Kong's nemesis as we review Super Mario Brothers on Tuesday.
Highly requested. I think I saw it once and don't remember why anyone would want to see it again, but that's what we're going
to
do.
Yes, be sure to eat some mushrooms and join us for Super Mario Brothers on Tuesday. So until then, keep on creeping on.
Where'd you get those creepers? Jeepers, creepers, where'd you get those eyes?
We threw everything we had at it, Danny. All the fire and manpower this building had to offer.
And it just made a whole lot of noise and flew off with exactly what it wanted.
Thank you again for your support of Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
You actually did something decent. I mean, that's a part of history you can't change.
Support from listeners like you is what keeps Now Playing able to podcast week after week.
I'm thinking past the point of my own selfish little existence now.
The film discussed in this podcast and all audio clips and music used are the property of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. This podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created or produced the film analyzed herein. Now Playing Podcast is an independent movie review podcast with no affiliation with any company involved in the publishing, creating, or distribution of that film series.
Is something real? I heard it was a bunch of bullshit.
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Truth be, I'd be lying if I said I knew that telling you this would do any good.
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2018, all rights reserved, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
I will continue to talk, and you can tell me if I'm getting soft. But
he's getting
speaking.
Really soft. I can't hear. My headphones are dead.
Do you have another pair?
Okay. He can just ignore everything I say.
Yeah, Stuart and I can have a conversation, and Arnie and I can have a conversation.
Yeah, exactly. I'll just talk to Marjorie about it all. I'm sure we'll agree.
Yes, I'm sure we will.
We don't want to hear. If you're going to defend Jeepers Creepers anymore, we don't even want to hear it.
I've missed monster slasher films. We just haven't seen any survive. I mean, Wishmaster hasn't had a new installment in how long, and...
That might
do
be okay.
Do you want to do that series? How many times have you brought up Wishmaster? I feel like that's, like, itching under the skin there. You need to do Wishmaster.
You know, he thrust Wishmaster upon me when we were dating about how this is this great horror series.
I don't get it, but you...
Installment of The Strangers Does Well.
I cannot hear The Strangers without thinking of the Wes Anderson.
On SNL.
The coterie of...
Yes, the coterie of, like, mass murders or something. That's... Yeah.
These cops are joined by Sheriff Dan Tashtego.
Tashtego? I don't even know why you would give that last name.
Yeah, Smith would have sufficed.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I put Tashtego all over my plot summary. I think I'm just going to call him Sheriff Dan.
They call him Danny throughout the movie.
Okay.
That urban legend, if you remember, what were their names? If you remember the people that I can't.
It ends on a bit of a down note, and I apologize that we picked such a shitty new movie to review, but who knew? I guess Canadian acting agencies knew.
Does that mean that you'll recognize maybe we shouldn't do Wishmaster?
I've never ever suggested Wishmaster, just for the record. I've
You've
never
talked about just it all the it time. Every show, it's Ghoulies and Wishmaster.
I've never once suggested Ghoulies 2 either. Maybe Ghoulies 1 the way we did Critters someday, but...
So Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and whatever they're calling Cloverfield 3 will start us back up in April.
And if that moves to October again, hey, we can always slot in Wishmaster.
Ghoulies!